Russia launches massive attacks across Ukraine.
The air raid alarm is actually still on over 12 hours right now. From my window, I'm just seeing the smoke still visible.
Plus, Israel thwarts a Hezbollah attack.
They were sort of set to go off at 5 o'clock in the morning, and 10 minutes before, Israel hit them and destroyed most of them.
And later, violent gangs are making a difficult situation worse in Africa as healthcare workers try to prevent the spread of Mpox. Plus, a look at the devastating impact of drought in Guatemala. Today is Monday, August 26th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint. Good evening, I'm Lori London alongside Steve Karish in Washington. Russia launched more than 100 missiles and around 100 drone attacks across Ukraine overnight and into the morning rush hour on Monday, killing at least 5 people. Officials say the strikes targeted power and other critical civilian infrastructure in at least 10 regions, including parts of Kyiv. I spoke with Anna Chernikova in Ukraine about the massive attacks in the past 24 hours.
I'm currently in the Kyiv region at my parents' place. The air raid alarm is actually still on over 12 hours right now. From my window, I'm just seeing the smoke still visible because just around 300 meters from my parents' house, the drone fall, and it was really, really loud. So basically, we've heard the sound, but we were in the basement at that moment. We were hiding because it was increased alarm that was reported by the local authorities. And after the increased alarm was off and, you know, normal alarm was ongoing, and I can actually still hear the sound of, you know, these emergency cars coming. We've seen the smoke, so I went to the place where the drone fall. It's really intense experience because it's really close to the private buildings where my parents are living and hundreds of other people.
When did this start?
Well, it started around 3 o'clock in the morning. The air raid alarm was on and it stopped just 20 minutes ago or something like that. And actually the attack was happening in waves. So there were a couple of waves and attack was across the country, not only Kyiv and Kyiv region, but Kyiv and Kyiv region especially. And there are reports of damages, and there are reports of especially damages of the energy infrastructure, which was the main target across the country. And in Kyiv, particularly, the attack was targeting Kyiv hydroelectric power plant and Kyiv dam. There is confirmation of damage of the plant, but there is no damage of the dam. So at this point, there is no reason the dam could collapse or anything like that. But energy situation is really critical across the country, including Kyiv and Kyiv region. So it was no electricity for a couple of hours, and a lot of places still has no electricity. It depends on really on the damages locally.
It must have been really frightening to have that so close to Kyiv and just hearing that for hours and hours and hours. Where were you and your family most of the time?
So when it was reported that the actual attack is happening, we went to the basement, of course, and we've spent the whole morning in the basement. But still, you know, in the basement, you still can hear the sound of explosions and the sound of the air defense working.
What about across the country? I understand that there were assaults across Ukraine in many regions.
Yes, actually, the damage and unfortunately, the casualties are almost in every region. So north, south, west, east. The main target was energy infrastructure this time again. And Russian forces succeed in certain points. For instance, it was a really bad damage in the western part of the country, as well as in Kyiv region, also in the Odessa region. And at this point, the Minister of Energy reported that energy situation is back to critical because it was a couple of weeks that situation was more or less stable, and the schedule of power outages will be back. So Ukrainians are getting ready to spend more days without electricity again. This attack was really intense, and it was one of the biggest in months, actually.
Anna Chernikova coming to us from Kyiv. Thank you so much, and please stay safe.
Thank you, Lori.
During the attacks, Polish and NATO air defenses were activated in eastern Poland, which borders Ukraine. Officials in Poland say a drone from the Russian bombardment may have entered its airspace, and searches are now underway to see if the object landed on its territory. Meanwhile, the UN Security Council is expected to meet on Wednesday at the request of the United States and Slovenia following this latest barrage.
The other top story we're following today is the heightened tensions in the Middle East and the war in Israel and Gaza and the fear of its spreading. Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon have traded cross-border fire this weekend, marking the heaviest exchange on that front in months. Israel's military also hit Hamas targets in Gaza, this just ahead of ceasefire talks in Egypt. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Israel says it launched airstrikes targeting thousands of rocket launchers to foil what it called an imminent attack from the Iranian-backed militant group Hezbollah. Hezbollah, meanwhile, says it fired hundreds of rockets and drones at Israel as payback for the killing of a top commander in Beirut last month. The uptick in violence marks the heaviest exchanges in months, and Israel says there's more to come. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu:
We are hitting Hezbollah. 3 weeks ago, we eliminated the chief of staff, and today we foiled the offensive plan. Nasrallah in Beirut and Khamenei in Tehran should know this is another step on the way to changing the situation in the north. And I repeat, this is not the end of the story.
Netanyahu respectively naming the leaders of Hezbollah and Iran in his statement. Meanwhile, on Saturday, local aid workers in Gaza said Israeli airstrikes killed at least 36 Palestinians there. The Israeli military said it was looking into the reports. All this just hours ahead of ceasefire talks in Egypt's capital, Cairo. Independent Senator Bernie Sanders speaking Sunday on ABC's This Week.
We have a very volatile situation in the Middle East. We have had that for a long time now. The good news is it appears that both Hezbollah and Israel are trying to de-escalate. I hope that happens, and I hope we reach a ceasefire with Hamas, Israel and Hamas, as soon as possible.
And while the violent uptick grounded some flights out of Israel's Ben-Gurion International Airport, for now at least it seems not to have triggered a larger-scale conflict in the region. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
For a closer look at the weekend's events and what their long-term implications might be, I'm joined by VOA's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
Israel launched a very large preemptive strike based on intelligence at hundreds of launchers, rocket launchers in southern Lebanon that Hezbollah had been primed to fire at Israel. They were sort of set to go off at 5 o'clock in the morning, and 10 minutes before Israel hit them and destroyed most of them. And apparently Hezbollah was aiming at several Israeli army and intelligence bases in the Tel Aviv area. And after the Israeli attack, Hezbollah did succeed in firing about 200 rockets and a couple of dozen drones, but they did not do any damage. They were either shot down by the Iron Dome or landed in open areas. But had that Hezbollah attack gone ahead and hit Israeli army bases and intelligence bases, then the Israeli response would have been even stronger, and it could very well have dragged the whole region into a war.
Both sides are kind of downplaying what happened over the weekend and, again, not looking to escalate things. Is that really the case, and how is that possible?
Well, that is the case. And in fact, both sides actually said it, that neither, you know, both Israel and Hezbollah said they don't want an all out war. And this way, the way that it happened, kind of, it gives Israel a chance to say, you know, we have this major victory over Hezbollah by taking out all of these rocket launchers before Hezbollah could fire. And Hezbollah can sort of ignore that part and say, we fired 200 missiles at Israel. And so we also succeeded and we retaliated. So it's kind of a way for both sides to climb down from the tree to claim victory and then to kind of calm things down. But that doesn't change the basic situation, which is still that Hezbollah and Israel are firing on each other every day with the possibility that it could spin out of control.
Now, of course, all this is happening as peace talks were set to resume. Have they started again? What's the mood there?
Well, they did start again in Cairo and finished. And, you know, the United States had said Antony Blinken was here last week, and he said this might be the last chance for a deal. And before this latest round of talks started, President Biden said that they were very close to a deal. That does not seem to be the case. And both Israel and Hamas said there are still major differences between them. However, the talks finished yesterday in Egypt, but they're going to go on at a lower level. And now there's talk that there might be at least a, 4 or 5 or 7 day humanitarian ceasefire, independent of the sort of political ceasefire, because there was the first case of polio was discovered in Gaza. And Israel has allowed a lot of vaccines into Gaza, but there is something like more than 600,000 children in Gaza who need to be vaccinated. And health organizations say it would take them about 7 days to do that. So it's one possibility that they'll come to a deal for a temporary ceasefire. There also is another plan that they might agree to the first stage of this three-stage plan, which would be a 6-week ceasefire, the release of some of the Israeli hostages, and without having agreed on the next phases. So it's not clear. You know, so many times over the past few months, they've been sort of on the verge of a deal, and then it's fallen apart for one reason or another. So I think it's too soon to be, you know, too optimistic, but there does seem to be some movement on this.
VOA's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. Linda, thanks for your time. Thanks for your reporting.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to Flashpoint from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish, and I'm joined by Lori London in Washington. The head of a popular messaging app is behind bars in France. We'll learn more in a few moments. Now, though, North Korean state media reports that Kim Jong-un is ramping up production of so-called suicide drones. Gabe Singer of Reuters has more.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un oversaw a test of homegrown so-called suicide drones over the weekend. That's according to state media on Monday, which released these images said to show Kim inspecting the drones on Saturday at North Korea's Drone Institute and looking on as they took off and destroyed test targets, including a mock tank. Also known as loitering munitions, they attack by crashing into the target with a built-in warhead. Such weapons have been widely used in the war in Ukraine as well as in the Middle East. The report said Kim urged researchers to develop artificial intelligence for the unmanned vehicles and called to ramp up production of suicide drones, including those that can be used underwater, as well as reconnaissance and multi-purpose attack drones. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said on Monday they were monitoring North Korea's military activities and were prepared for any provocations. When asked about visual similarities between some of the drones in the images from Kim's Saturday visit and those used and produced by Russia, a spokesperson said more analysis was necessary.
That's Gabe Singer of Reuters reporting for us today.
Health authorities in sub-Saharan Africa say armed gangs and rebel groups are obstructing their access to towns and villages that are suspected of having Mpox cases. The United Nations says international awareness is needed to reduce the spread of the virus, which has been designated a global public health emergency. VOA's Steve Miller has this report by Moki Edwin Kinzeka.
Officials in the Central African Republic, or CAR, say health workers striving to contain an outbreak of the Mpox virus are complaining of difficulties gaining safe access to towns and villages where armed gangs operate. CAR government troops are fighting rebels to stop violence and political turmoil that began in 2013. Pierre Somsi is CAR's health minister.
Cette augmentation exponentielle.
Somsi says armed groups should know that civilians whose lives are threatened by an unprecedented Mpox virus outbreak need urgent assistance. Somsi says armed groups in conflict zones like Bayonga Town near the Congo border should assist the CAR government in stopping the disease. Somsi spoke on CAR State TV. The Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, is another country with internal armed conflict. The WHO says that the country has more than 95% of the total of about 17,000 cases of Mpox reported globally this year. The Central African state reports close to 530 deaths from the disease. The UN says within the past few months, the virus has spread to five DRC neighbor nations, CAR, Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, and Uganda. Lugunza Malasi Joseph is a former Doctors Without Borders staff member and is now a political advisor to Democratic Republic of Congo's environmental minister. He says the virus spreads rapidly because humanitarian workers have difficulties securely visiting conflict-prone sub-Saharan communities. Lugunza spoke to VOA via messaging app from Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
People run from areas where there is conflict. And in that running away, there is no observation of hygiene. People just run for their lives. This poses a problem because you can't teach people to observe health measures when they are first running for their own lives.
Cameroon officials also say rebels are making it nearly impossible for health workers to have safe access to English-speaking regions where there are ongoing conflicts between government troops and armed separatists fighting to carve out independent states or regions from the French-majority country. Since July, Cameroon has reported at least 40 suspected Mpox cases with three deaths. About a dozen of the more than 40 cases are documented in Cameroon's English-speaking southwest region, where government troops are fighting separatists. The Republic of Congo says it has confirmed 19 of 60 suspected cases in its territory and is checking its borders against mass movements from CAR and DRC, where there are armed conflicts. Nigeria also says its humanitarian workers are being restricted from educating civilians to protect themselves from Mpox after 32 states reported at least one confirmed case of the Mpox virus. Nigeria has been fighting for more than 10 years against Boko Haram terrorists near its northern border with Chad, Cameroon, and Niger. Nigeria, Chad, Cameroon, CAR, and DRC say they are deploying government troops to protect both civilians and health and humanitarian workers from rebels and armed groups. None of the sub-Saharan countries have reported deaths of humanitarian workers. For Moki Edwin Kinzika, I'm Steve Miller. VOA News.
Drought and crop failure are a pervasive threat in Guatemala, particularly in the rural areas. It's a reality that international aid programs are trying to curb. Arti Tarapayan has more.
International aid programs are aiming to train people on sustainable farming practices in Guatemala in an effort to combat hunger and malnutrition. Guatemala straddles a region known as the Central American Dry Corridor. Over the past decade, droughts have been longer and more severe, and extreme weather like hurricanes have caused widespread damage. It's put families living in the region in vulnerable situations and unable to properly feed their children. Tanya Gusens is a representative with the World Food Program, or WFP. She says the training has led to some improvements, and that the program is an excellent model for countries facing climate change challenges. According to UNICEF data, Guatemala's rate of stunting is consistently one of the highest in Latin America, with 44% of children falling outside of the normal height for age range in 2022. Lillian Ramos is a fish producer at a town in the Dry Corridor.
Before, we didn't know what fish farming was. There was a lot of malnutrition here. But then the program came and we got quite involved. We started with a small well and we saw how we grew little by little.
The World Food Program training emphasizes the use of innovation and anticipatory actions to minimize damage to crops and food sources.
That's R.T. Tarapayan of Reuters reporting for us today.
And finally, are tech companies or their CEOs liable for the criminal actions of their customers? Well, it seems that France thinks they are. The founder and CEO of messaging service Telegram was detained in Paris on an arrest warrant, alleging his platform has been used for money laundering, drug trafficking, and other offenses like the distribution of child sexual content. Pavel Durov is a dual citizen of France and Russia. He and Telegram say they've complied with all laws, although Western governments have often criticized Telegram for its lack of content moderating. It's a big issue for the future of the internet and social apps. VOA's Scott Walterman talked with Seth Schachner, managing director of Strat Americas, a Los Angeles-based media and technology consultancy.
Well, so, you know, Telegram, and I'm talking, I guess, from the United States or, you know, maybe a typical American, you know, perspective, is one of these apps that isn't maybe on the American radar as much as it should be. But it's a messaging app. I believe it has Russian roots. And, you know, it's a completely freewheeling, unmoderated messaging app. And there is legitimate good stuff up on it. But there's obviously been a lot of concern around disinformation, cyber criminals.
So the arrest warrant alleges the platform has been used for money laundering, drug trafficking, and other offenses, including child pornography. Europe has been way out in front of laws that protect internet and cell phone users, haven't they?
Correct. The Digital Services Act is out there. They're way ahead in many respects of the rest of the world. So they really have. And I think particularly the Brits, but the EU in general, have, I would say, what you would call forward-looking acts that are looking at AI and all of these new privacy and moderation concerns around social networks. And they've obviously been aggressive in terms of finding our tech titans as well. And I've heard criticisms of over-aggressive regulatory actions as well. But I think it's fair to say they've been kind of out in front of pretty much the globe in terms of how you regulate these issues. And I think, you know, when I looked at this, I do think that, if you're Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk and you're looking at this, and Musk has already talked about it, it's clearly a threat to your ability to freely run your content areas.
Well, one of the allegations, one of the specific allegations is that the online sexual exploitation of children, possession and distribution of child sexual abuse content, and grooming for sexual purposes. So really the question, I guess, what we're looking at is, do these companies, do Facebook, do WhatsApp, does X, does Telegram, have a responsibility to police the content that's being posted on their systems, or can they hide behind, it's not our content, we're just the mechanism?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, and of course. And, you know, I mean, these are, you know, patently horrible things that you're rolling through here. So I am a firm believer that moderation is a good thing and needs to be there. No question in my view, and I don't, you know, if you really look at the debate around free speech over safety, there's no question that wins. Public safety always wins out every time. But I'm a firm believer that you do need to moderate content on your networks. And I'll pick on Twitter or X a little bit here because, you know, I think that's an example of a place that is, in my experience, so unmoderated that the user experience has been completely, you know, degraded in my view. And I think the thing with Telegram, you know, there's been all sorts of information, disinformation around the Ukraine conflict. You know, this laundry list of criminality that you're describing on there as well, anti-Semitism, just tons of stuff that's on it that is unregulated, unmoderated. I don't know how that's a good thing. I apologize, but, you know, I don't think that's the approach for any of these things. So
that was VOA's Scott Walterman speaking with Seth Schachner of Strat Americas. And that ends today's program, but there is more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of Steve Karish and all of us here at VOA, we thank you very much for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Lori London.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with the 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.